Our guest today is Michael Hadley, attorney at law, who is running for the position of district attorney in Venango County. Welcome, Michael.
Good morning, Jane, and thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. We'll start our interview off with the first question about giving us some historical background on yourself as a resident of Venango County.
Okay. Jane, I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you, all of your listeners, and through the airwaves and the internet, the people of Venango County. This is a great opportunity, and I'm glad to be here, and I very deeply appreciative of you having me and giving this opportunity. Obviously, the district attorney's office is an extremely important position. I'm 43 years old. I've lived in Venango County my entire life. I was born in Oil City. I've resided there my whole life. My mother and father are here. My grandparents are from Venango County. I get to probably the most comment is my uncle, Dr. Hadley. I hear from people he delivered, to people he cared for people he's known. Of course, my mother was a nurse. I meet many of her patients that she attended to in her many years as a nurse. She's retired now. So I am a lifetime resident. Two of my three brothers reside here, William and Stephen. And my roots run deep in this community. I care about this community. I went to law school out in Toledo, Ohio, and I went to undergrad in Bloomington, Indiana, and I had lots of opportunities to live anywhere else, but I've come home. I've come back here, and I'm glad to be here. Part of that perspective of 43 years is we've seen some changes, and we've seen some different times. We are in hard times. We know that. That's not a secret. But I know what this county can be. I know the greatness of its people. And I hope as the district attorney, I can serve them. So my roots run deep. And I don't think, I'm very comfortable with my connections and qualifications as a lifelong resident of Venango County.
The next question that we have, and by the way, these questions were formulated by the Venango County Tea Party Patriots input. And one of the questions here is, why do you feel that you're qualified to be district attorney?
Well, Jane, I am not only qualified, I believe I am the most qualified of the three candidates to be district attorney based on my training, experience, and record of achievement. As I mentioned in the first question, I graduated in 1993 from Bloomington, Indiana University, with a degree in finance, and I had a minor in political science. I then went on to law school at the University of Toledo, graduated in 1996. Now, the Toledo experience was very interesting and very important for this job. As a law student, I was able to serve as a prosecutor in Monroe County, Michigan, and in the city of Toledo's municipal prosecutor's office. So I have both small county experience in Monroe County, Michigan. It's probably similar to Venango County, would be my memory of it. And I have the big city experience as a prosecutor in Toledo, Ohio. We used to come in as prosecutors. We'd come in at 8:30 in the morning, ready to go to work, and there'd be a stack of 80 cases. And we'd have to run all 80 of those cases through in the morning. And so you learn quick and you learn fast. So I have the small county experience. I've got that big county of experience of being able to run a lot of cases. And so the training and experience qualifies me. Since I've practiced law, I've had over approximately 100 jury trials. Many of those have been 2 or 3 day trials. Many of those have been week long plus trials. I would assume I've spent over 250 days actually in trial. I've handled every type of criminal case from a speeding ticket to a homicide. I mean, I've tried first-degree murder cases to a jury verdict. I have that experience. I'm lucky enough, I have a very active federal practice. I practice the criminal law in the federal courts, have that experience. I've been lucky enough to have been chosen by our judges to serve on the local criminal rules committee. I'm the only candidate running who did that. I've been chosen to serve the Bar Association as our representative to the House of Delegates in Harrisburg on several occasions. And again, I'm the only candidate running with that. Also, again, in the federal practice, I'm on the Criminal Justice Act panel. so that when the federal judges need to make an appointment in a criminal case, they call upon me. I'm the only one of the three candidates running with that experience. So training, experience, record of achievement, all of that makes me qualified. 17 years of the practice of law. And I've been lucky enough to have clients who've asked me to take some of their cases that have put me on the big stage. By the big stage, I mean a lot of press coverage, a lot of attention, different sides. And that forms you. You know, once you've been sort of fire tested, once you've been through big stage, you grow. And you grow as an attorney. And so that experience has gotten you there. Sometimes the clients are right. Sometimes they're wrong. But once you're in the game, once you've experienced it, and I'm the candidate who brings that to the table, and the only candidate.
Okay. Now, you're running under the Republican ticket in this primary. So how long have you been with the party, and what party-held values will you promote as district attorney?
Jane, that is a great question. I have been a member of the Republican Party for 20-plus years. In fact, of the three candidates, I'm the only one who can say that. I don't think it's any secret that both of my opponents are lifetime Democrats who have only switched parties in the last couple months in order to run under the Republican ticket. Both of them changed their parties just within the last few months. I've got 20-plus years as a member of the Republican Party. Furthermore, I have served the Republican Party as a poll watcher. I have served as their Election Day lawyer. I have received the Republican Party statewide training for attorneys. I have actually represented the Republican Party in some legal proceedings when necessary. So my bona fides and credentials with the Republican Party run deep. Now, the second part of that, Jane, about the principles. Now, that's the one I really want to focus on, and I think that's what your listeners are most interested in. What is it that Mike Hadley and the Republican Party believe in? What do we, what are our principles? Well, I tell everyone that to know my political beliefs and what I stand for, you need to listen to Ronald Reagan's first inaugural address, January 20th, 1981. If you get a chance, and this is on the internet and on the radio, YouTube has it word to word in a three-part, three different segments to go watch. It's an amazing speech. And that speech basically says and covers everything I believe in. The two things that we want to focus on locally, the Republican values that Mike Hadley has, and I believe your viewers have and the people have, is first, limited government. Mike Hadley believes in the Republican principle of limited government. And second, the Republican principle of personal responsibility. Those two principles are what I stand for and what I'm most interested in. Now let's talk a little bit about limited government. Every criminal action that's brought is an interaction between the power of government and the freedom of a citizen. Every time the government brings the force of a criminal prosecution against a citizen, that is a governmental action. And if you have the principles, as I do, of limited government, you can decide what is appropriate, what is the correct use. So you've always got to remember that this is the government against the free people who formed the government. As we came in here today, there's lots of sign, we the people. This is our government. And I know it's intended to be of limited and express powers. Now, just quickly with the few seconds left on this question on personal responsibility, I don't think there's anybody in the Republican Party or any of your listeners who, when the person who works at Joy is laid off and they need some help in the form of unemployment compensation from one job to the next, we agree with that. The child who was born blind and disabled, we don't have a problem with a little assistance. But when our social safety net becomes a bonus check for drug dealers, and our public housing becomes a den for them to deal drugs, I've got an issue with that. That is not taking personal responsibility. That's abusing the system. That is abusing our generosity and our charity. There are plenty of people who deserve it. We have a system for that. But when I see it being abused, and every time I go out and speak, someone's got a story. And so that's going to end when I'm district attorney. So limited government, personal responsibility is what Mike Hadley joins the Republican Party in, and have been doing that for 20-plus years.
Okay. Would you describe for our listeners what the primary role is of the district attorney?
Yes. In fact, I have carried with me a citation from the Pennsylvania appellate courts that says it very well, because I think there is a lot of confusion. What is the actual role of the district attorney? In fact, the district attorney is formed in what's called the Commonwealth's Attorneys Act. You're the Commonwealth's attorney. But the quote is this, that the district attorney is not an advocate in the ordinary sense of the term. His duty is to seek justice, to protect the innocent, as well as to convict the guilty. So unlike your private attorney, who you would hire to fight as hard as they can for your interests, the role of the prosecutor, the people's attorney, is primarily or is solely a minister of justice to do what is right under the facts of the situation. It is to do justice. It's not to rack up as many convictions. It's not to rack up as many years in prison as you can, unless justice demands it. It's to do justice, to dispassionately review the facts and propose it. Because as the district attorney, your client is or are the people. My client will be the people of Venango County. The police will bring criminal cases. Citizens can also file private criminal complaints. But I'm not their attorney. I'm here for all of us. All 55,000 residents of Venango County are entitled to see justice done in accordance with our Constitution of the United States, with the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, with our principles, with our morality, with our local sense of justice. So the district attorney is a minister of justice sworn to represent the interest of the people, not the defense lawyers, not the police, but to do justice. And that's why I want to be the district attorney, to be that minister of justice, to call it fair. Whatever's right is right. There may be some political heat sometimes for taking action. There's going to be heat for not taking action. But I want to do justice and do what's right by the people of our county.
Okay. Well, if you're elected as a district attorney, what plans do you have to implement any positive changes in our community that would, and what would they be?
Yeah. Well, I call this, my plan is the three E's. And the three E's are education, engagement, and enforcement. As the district attorney, you've got to be engaged in the local community. You've got to be able to liaison with all that. We have 8 school districts that Venango County is a part of. It would be my plan to liaison with each of those school districts regularly to see what are the issues, what are the young people going through, what are you seeing, what are the trends, what do you need help with. We have 33 municipalities and 2 third-class cities to engage with the local elected officials, to have a regular meetings, to engage with the city of Oil City, the city of Franklin, Cranberry, Sugar Creek, Scrubgrass, all the municipalities. You've got to be engaged. I cannot be an effective district attorney just sitting in that third floor office and dealing with what comes in. So I want to be proactive. I want to be engaged. Now, the other most important is enforcement. I don't think there's any of us who are not fed up with the hard drug problem. Hard drugs are destroying our community. They are destroying the youth. And I have a plan to use the forfeiture rules. The law allows forfeiture. And when these drug dealers start losing their houses, their cars, their plasma TVs, their Xboxes to forfeiture, they'll learn. They'll learn, don't come to Venango County. Don't bring that garbage here. Don't deal it here, because you're going to lose everything you got and you're going to get a harsh sentence. And I hope when we bring this, the judges, and I presume they will back me up. They give the sentence. All I do is get the conviction if justice requires it. I hope our judges will know that when I put a case in front of them, it's worthy of a stiff sentence. And when we bring these hard drug dealers in and we forfeit their property, I hope the judges give them tough sentences. So what I want to do is enforcement, engagement, and education. I want to be out with the people. I want to be talking with them. I want to, because this is a big problem. We have, and I can't do it alone. One man, even Superman, sitting in that DA's office can't solve what we need. but together we can do this. And that's why those are the positive changes that Mike Hadley will bring as district attorney.
Okay, when the district attorney is elected, or when you are elected, you will take the same oath of office as other officials take to protect and defend the Constitution. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is to support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Okay. So do you consider yourself a constitutional lawyer?
As a lawyer, all of us know that the first and foremost document you look to is the Constitution. Not just the Constitution of the United States, but the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And I have to say that because of the national press and all the discussions about our federal constitution, we often forget that we have a state constitution. Mm-hmm. We have a state That's right. constitution which provides far greater rights than our federal constitution. While the federal constitution provides a lot of rights, that's only the floor. Each state can ensure its own citizens of more. We all know William Penn and his commitment to religious freedom and how important that was to him. We all know William Penn, the founder of our Commonwealth, commitment to the privacy from government. And let me give you an example of that and how important it is. The United States Constitution, the Fourth Amendment, has been interpreted by our Supreme Court to allow federal agents, without a search warrant, to look at your bank records. Without a search warrant, the feds, that's not the right term, federal government agents can look at your bank records. In the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, our Supreme Court has interpreted our state constitution as having a higher level of privacy, requiring that if bank records are to be looked at by state officials, get a search warrant. And so, yes, the constitutions are both important. I would say yes. I guess the phrase constitutional lawyer, but I've argued constitutional law. I'm the only candidate who has appeared, I believe, twice now before our Pennsylvania Supreme Court to present oral argument. I have submitted 3 cases for review to the United States Supreme Court, and all of them involved substantial constitutional issues. That's the only reason the high courts are interested in these type cases. And so absolutely, we know, and it is it's a precious document. It is unique among the nations of the earth. It's the only country that I know of that they talk about the Constitution. I mean, I'm pretty well educated. I'm pretty well traveled, but does the United Kingdom have a constitution? How is their government? I mean, I have some ideas, but nobody speaks like they do about that great document that came out in our country. So yes, I not only support it, will obey and defend it, but I love the document. I think it's so important. How it gets interpreted sometimes, some of us are not happy with, but we love it, and it's absolutely, and it'll be my first duty to defend the Constitution.
Okay, well, that's good to know. There are some people who take that oath, of course. I question whether they ever have read the Constitution, and the Constitution speaks of our citizens being endowed with unalienable rights. If so, what are the rights, and why do you believe that they're inalienable rights?
Well, that's true, and that's also our Declaration of Independence. I mean, that is as much a part of the organic law of the United States of America as is the Constitutions. And I say plural because I mean the state and the federal constitutions. And you're right. I don't believe these God-given rights are limited just to the citizens who were born on American soil. I think every one of God's children who's born, wherever they're born, has the right to religious freedom, to freedom of the press, to freedom to assemble, the freedom to petition their government. That little baby who's born today in North Korea has absolutely all those same God-given rights, not because of government giving them to them, but because of the mere incident of your birth. You're born with these rights. Now, the question is, you and I can have this discussion. Some of these things, if I said them in North Korea, might get me executed. There are places in this world where those God-given birthrights are not being exercised. And so let's think about that. What is the difference? The difference is here, we are a free people. We have documents that enshrine that. But all the great documents in the world, all the pieces of paper don't mean a thing if we don't have people enforcing them and believing in them and standing up for them. So yes, all of these inalienable rights. And I always question, I remember the debate of the at least as portrayed in television, in movies, of the Declaration of Independence debate, whether it's unalienable or inalienable rights. I'll use either one, but we know what we're talking about. And it would take an expert in the English language to tell me the correct one. But they're there. But the words on paper don't mean anything if you don't put them to action, if you don't live and breathe it, and if you don't care about it. So, yes, I want to care about them. I want to make sure that through our legal system, every one of them is protected. And it doesn't do any good to have the right to the press, with a right to free speech. I guess we're here on the radio and on the internet, if we're censored, if the government can shut us down.
That's right.
And so I will defend all of the rights of the Constitution and all of these unalienable and inalienable rights, civil liberties, in my office, and I will never trample on the Bill of Rights of the citizens of this Commonwealth.
Okay. Now, here's a hot topic in Venango County, and that is, what's your feeling on gun control?
I am a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I will not support an Obama gun grab. I will do everything I can in my office to support the Second Amendment. I will do everything, given that it's a county office, given that I have some limitations, but everything I can do, I will loan and give my voice, and I will put the weight of my office behind protecting the Second Amendment. When I go out and meet people, this is huge. This is not, I mean, there's some subtle issues at the federal level of, you know, that some people argue about, right? How do we regulate air traffic over a certain city or things like that? Everyone knows this one. Everybody in this county has a gun, is a hunter, loves the environment. And I am a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I cannot say that strongly enough. And whatever I can do with, again, my county office, I will defend the people's rights and do everything I can. This is huge to me. And the more I see it, I can tell you, your listeners, the people care about this one. This is something they really feel. There's no other issue that gets them as hot as this one. Mm-hmm. And so I will work to support the Second Amendment.
Okay. Well, the next question kind of feeds into that, and that would be about how you would pursue prosecution of a citizen who practiced civil disobedience by refusing to obey an unconstitutional law, that, such as relinquishing a firearm.
And I think the key to this question is an unconstitutional law. Obviously, my office will not enforce any law that has been found to be unconstitutional, has been found to offend our principles and our rules. So there will be no prosecutions in my district attorney's office of any unconstitutional laws. Mm-hmm. And now, I guess the better question is, how are we going to litigate? How are we going to find out what's constitutional or unconstitutional? If it's permitted, and I believe it is, because I know Tom Corbett has been a litigant when he was the attorney general to litigation. If my office has to litigate the constitutionality of some of this stuff, so we have and take the position, in this case, of guns in support of the Second Amendment, I'll have no problem doing that. If my office can do that, I'd be glad to support the Second Amendment as a plaintiff, as a person bringing the action. But absolutely zero unconstitutional laws will ever be enforced by my office. None whatsoever.
Okay. Well, I think we've pretty well covered the next question about your stand on the Second Amendment.
Yeah, yeah.
You made that very clear. Is there anything else you'd like to say on that?
Well, I mean, we could go on about it. I mean, again, I think people feel this one. It's important. And it's an ancient right. I mean, it was in the original Second Amendment, in the Bill of Rights. I mean, it was one of the things that came forward. I mean, there are some great quotes from Thomas Jefferson about it. There are some lot of well-spoken issues, people speaking about this issue. And I think we know its purpose, and we know that how important it is and why it needs to be defended. So, yeah,
okay.
I think you're right. I'm comfortable that we've covered the Second Amendment.
All right. Tell us what your thoughts are on the Tea Party movement.
And, Jane, I think that's a great question, and I'm really glad to speak to your audience about this. I really want to address this in two different angles. First, I'm having had a minor in political science, I like studying the political process. And no matter what your thoughts are on the Tea Party, you've got to really respect what they were able to do in 2010 when they put 60-plus Republicans in the House of Representatives. I mean, that's all Tea Party. They get all the credit for that in the world. Again, like them or not like them, there isn't anybody who can fairly not give credit for that. And this is an organic movement. It came from the grassroots up. And from just a pure political science point of view, that's very impressive that anyone can do that. We just had an election in 2012, and I think only 9 seats switched. To put 60 seats in play in the House of Representatives is a huge accomplishment. So from that point of view, it is quite an accomplishment. Now, the Tea Party, like any organic sort of grassroots up movement, has factions. There's one group here, there's one group there. They're not like a official like Republican Party or Democratic Party.
They're not a party.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But of the different factions, I guess we'll call them, the one that I've seen that I like the most, and I think the sign might still be up on one of the roads I drive home where it says Tea Party, taxed enough already, TEA. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit. I agree. We are taxed enough already. We just suffered, and I use the word suffered because I think that's what it is, a tax increase from our county commissioners. A tax increase from the city of Oil City, since I live. I'm not sure how many other municipalities raised their taxes this budget year. But again, we're taxed enough already. And what we're seeing, when you raise taxes, and we'll talk about the county level here, when you raise taxes to maintain the same level of services or a diminished level of services, you've started the death spiral. Because next year, that same level of government services is going to cost the cost of living more. It's going to cost 2 or 3% more. If you've had to raise taxes, well, you're not going to have an increased tax base next year. You're not going to have more. You're going to have more homes in repository not paying taxes. You're going to have less people living here to pay the per capita tax. So do we increase the taxes again? And does it continue? I think it is no coincidence that the newspaper was reporting a 9.8% unemployment in our region the same time the tax bills hit and taxes are increased, because people are spending less. They're holding on to their money knowing that bill's coming. And it may not seem like much when they try to tell you it's only $50 a household. But you multiply that by all the households in this county, that's how much less money for pizza night, for movie night, for taking your family out for dinner, and people hurt. So yeah, taxed enough already? Completely, Mike Hadley agrees. Now, here's what the DA's office can do. I can run a financially responsible DA's office. We will not spend the taxpayers' money frivolously. And I really believe this forfeiture can turn it into potentially a cash positive office if necessary. Depending on how aggressive we can get and how intense we can get, we may be able to be revenue positive out of the DA's office. And so we don't have to have the tax increases. I certainly will keep my office in check. We will do everything we can to reduce costs, because this taxed enough already hits a note with me, because the county went up, the city went up. We pay sales tax on almost everything we buy except clothing and food. We've got tax on our gasoline, tax on our cell phones, on taxes when you die. We're one of only a handful of states that have a death tax. So, yes, Tea Party, again, two things. Great history of accomplishment, deserve a lot of credit, and the taxed enough already, you got my support 100%.
Okay. Some are interested in knowing if you would prosecute a violation of an obscenity law, such as promotion and sale of pornography, and would you uphold existing ordinances regarding sexually oriented businesses?
Jane, I think this is a really good question, because I don't think people understand that obscenity is against the law. I happened to be involved last February or the February before in a major federal obscenity case. So I've studied this law. I'm familiar with it. Pennsylvania has on the books an obscenity law. It's Title 18, Section 5903 of our Crimes Code. It is possible to prosecute obscenity. And I think people have gotten too comfortable with the idea that First Amendment speech covers everything. It doesn't. If a material is obscene, and there's a legal definition based on the famous Supreme Court case California versus Miller, there's a three-part test of obscenity. If a matter is obscene, it is a crime in this commonwealth to produce it, to exchange it, to trade it, to own it, to possess it. You may not possess obscene material. And so ultimately, the definition of obscenity mainly comes down to community standards. But am I opposed to prosecuting an obscenity case in the right circumstances? Absolutely not. If there is obscene material, you know, again, there is a we have just to pick an example, you have Playboy magazine, and then you got stuff that's way off the chart. I don't think anybody's looking for a prosecution of a Playboy magazine. Personal choice, if you like it or not, that's your choice. But there is stuff now disseminated on the internet that's way off the charts that would legally meet this definition of obscenity. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, there was a prosecution in Pittsburgh in the Western District of Pennsylvania for one of these internet smut dealers, and he got convicted and did some time. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the obscenity laws are on the books. They can be prosecuted, and it's something I think people don't know, but it's out there. You do not have absolute free reign under the First Amendment if you're peddling obscenity.
This next question is, have you ever been convicted of a crime?
No.
Okay, short and sweet. I guess it's kind of a redundant question because you can't run for DA if you've been convicted of a crime. Is that right?
I believe that's correct.
Yes, okay. Do you have a good working relationship with all the county judges and county officials?
Yes, very much so. In fact, I really think both of our sitting judges, which is President Judge Lobaugh, the Associate Judge, Judge Boyer, and then our Senior Judge, Judge White, will be very open-minded to a new district attorney's office. I think they will be very supportive of my plan to run hard drugs out of this county. That when I put a heroin dealer in front of them, when I put a crack dealer in front of them, and I look at them and say, Judge, this one needs a hard sentence. This one needs to go. I believe that they will give that great weight and they will give the appropriate sentence. It's not my plan to put garbage cases in front of our judges. Well, I won't get into details of things that probably shouldn't have come to court, but I believe that our judges, when I'm our district attorney, they'll know if I bring it to court, it's a serious matter, it deserves their attention, and I believe I will have 100% of their support to do the right thing in the right case. I will only put cases in front of them that need firm sentences and that justice demands that, and I think they'll be on board 100%.
Okay, very good. And the last question we have here is, do you believe a candidate for DA should be officially endorsed by their party before the primary?
Well, on this one, Jane, I think all of us who are running, I mean, let's be honest, the only endorsement that matters, the only endorsement that I'm seeking is the people of Venango County. They don't answer to any hierarchy. They're not controlled by anyone. They're certainly welcome to reach out to their local committee people and committee men and women and speak with them. But it's the people who matter. They hold the ultimate power, and it's their endorsement on May 21st that I'm asking for, which happens to be my 43rd birthday. So that'll be interesting on my to have an election on your birthday. See how it goes. But
either have a good day or a bad day, I guess.
Well, that's true. But it'll be my birthday
either
way.
Momentous day. That's right.
Yeah, I don't know who's ever how often that happens that candidates' elections happens to be on their birthday. But no, I think that's what I'm seeking is the people's endorsement, and I think everyone agrees with that.
All right. Well, to sum up, is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners before we close the interview?
Jane, I want to thank you for doing this. This is important. This is a chance to educate and to speak to the people, and I'm glad to do this. I do want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Oil City and maybe spreading throughout the county. I give a lot of speeches in Oil City and talk with a lot of people, and I can literally tell them where we're standing is only a few blocks from an armed robbery, either, like, let's say, the Subway store, which was victimized, or the dollar store, or some of our grocery stores. We've spoken and only been a few blocks from Justice Park, where there was an alleged rape a few months ago. We've spoken where we're only a few blocks from a municipal parking lot where last summer there was an alleged stabbing. Now, none of this existed when I was a young man. None of this existed a few years ago. This has to stop. We will never, never grow our economy or our business with lawlessness. If we don't have safe streets, no one's going to put a business there. And if a prospective business owner is coming to town and they see this reported in the newspaper, it's going to hurt us. And so we cannot begin to grow the economy until we return law and order to the streets. And primarily, the driver of these offenses, I believe, is the hard drugs. The hard drugs, which I know, and I think a lot of people know, are coming in a direct pipeline from Detroit, Michigan, into our community. We are directly targeted by these criminal organizations to bring these hard drugs in. I'm going to stop that. I have been in a position to see some of the investigations in some of my federal cases, where you'll see the car rental records, the texts, the phone messages, and you see this is not coincidence. This is a deliberate, targeted effort to come at our county. It is going to be my duty, and it's going to be my first priority to run them out of town, to do everything we can through strict enforcement, through forfeiture laws, through every tool available as the attorney for the Commonwealth to run those hard drugs out. And then the streets get safe. And then we stop then the major crimes stop. And then the businesses can come back. And then when the businesses come back, there's tax revenue. And we can start paving the streets and filling the storefronts and returning to what this used to be. We were great once. We can be great again. We are not built on a nuclear waste dump. We are not sitting on a sinkhole. This county can return to greatness and will return to greatness, but we've got to start with law and order, safety in the streets. I've got a plan. I've got a history of accomplishment, experience, training, and education to accomplish it. And Jane, I can promise your people that'll be my priority. And again, thank you and your listeners and the internet listeners for this opportunity. This mm-hmm. has been a wonderful chance, and I really appreciate it.
And thank you very much for taking advantage of helping our voters to be more informed.
You're welcome.
The Venango County Tea Party Patriots thanks you for being an informed voter and encourages you to get out and vote on May 21st. These interviews with the candidates for district attorney can be found at www.vctpp.org. That's the Venango County Tea Party Patriot website at vctpp.org.